Everyone can tell what it is, but how do you get it? With so many styles of music, with new gear coming out almost daily, what's the secret to great tone? Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show, where we talk about tone, what it is, and how to get it. With your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, we will talk to the creators of tone, the manufacturers, and the players, as we explore tone and the gear that gets it.
Tonight on the Flow Guitar Radio Show, we have Lance Lerman from LSL Guitars. Custom-made guitars, great tone, and they make everything, all the components by themselves. And we want to thank our sponsors, Sweetwater Music and also Guitar Hummer, for being on the show. Welcome to the Flow Guitarist Enthusiast Radio Show. We have a great night here today. I've got some great people here. Scott's still on vacation, but I have the lovely Monique Caravello here helping me co-host the show. Hey, Monique, how are you doing?
Hey, here I am.
A couple of things I want to say before we get to our guest. First of all, I want to know, how's everything going with the amp, the purple amp?
Oh, the Purple John 5 project. Very well. She's going to be wrapped in all the fine details taken care of this week, and so he'll be getting a call. I think I mentioned last week the biggest deal on this one was the careful extraction of the bolts.
Yes.
Because they like to use those little self-spreading ones. So, you know, it's all about not damaging anything. So sometimes it's a little time-consuming. So forgive me, John, if I'm running behind. But between that and Christmas and New Year's, this will be the week. He'll get a call.
Well, so, you have to post some pictures of that. I want to see
purple one. Yeah, I'm just waiting to do all the finishing touches and I'll put a little album together.
No problem. Anyway, a couple of announcements real quick. On March 30th, we're going to have this. Lonnie's going to have the second Guitar Pedal Expo. Check out www.guitarpedalexpo.com for information on that. And also on May 31st to June 1st, he's going to have the Dallas Amp Show, www.ampshow.com, or you can contact Lonnie on both of those at lonnie@ampshow.com. Also, too, I want to mention a very good friend of ours, Norman Harris. He's having a benefit concert for the Midnight Mission in downtown L.A., and it's the theme is From Hollywood with Love, hosted by Kevin Nealon. And he has guests Richie Sambora, Phoebo, and John Jorgensen, Robin Ford, John Bonamassa, Jason Sine. You can check out our show. We had him in our archives. Great guitar player, great collector, too. Jimmy Vivino, Tony Gala, Kirk Fletcher, Grant Geisman, who was also on our show, Jimmy Earle, and the amazing Del Casher, who was on our first show, the inventor of the wah-wah pedal. So anyway, that's Saturday, January 11th, 2014 at 7:30 p.m. at the Musicians Institute. And you can buy tickets at fromhollywoodwithlove.charityhappenings.org. So check it out. It's a good cause, and there's some amazing music there. Okay, we're going to take a break, and when we get back, we're going to talk to our friend Lance Lerman and LSL Guitars.
There's a product out called Guitar Hummer that's designed to give you vintage sound without the vintage weight. We all know the more a guitar is played, the better the sound. Guitar Hummer is a guitar stand that simulates play by sending gentle vibrations through your guitar as it sits. Swap your guitar stand for Guitar Hummer, and in just a few weeks, you will notice deeper, richer tone and improved sustain. But don't take our word for it. Try it for 60 days, and if you don't notice a marked difference, return it for a full refund. Go to GuitarHummer.com for more information or to purchase.
Hi, this is Aaron Raby, your resident guitars and amps geek at Sweetwater Sound. 1-800-222-4700. Or catch us on the web at www.sweetwater.com. Still looking for the gift for the musician in your family? At Sweetwater, it's not too late. We've got everything from guitars to amps to accessories, recording and PA gear, keyboards, drums, you name it. If your musician's into it, we can supply it. Just give us a call and we'll work it out for you. 1-800-222-4700. Or again, you can visit us on the web at www.sweetfamily. A great holiday. Again, I'm Aaron Raby. Thanks for having us.
we are back. All of us always have been looking for that golden tone, that amazing sound. And that guitar right there, I think, best exemplifies it. First of all, let me introduce everybody that's in here. We got a bunch of people in here besides Monique and Lance. Joe Mazzio, he's on a Telecaster. I've known him for years, since he was knee-high to a grasshopper. And the guy playing right now is Henry Sedeos, who we grew up together in school, and an amazing player. He's playing one of the LSL guitars, the Strat-style guitar, and you can tell that the tone is just, he's getting that real glassy sound that everybody's striving for. But we're here to talk to the guy that made that guitar, designed that guitar, Lance Lerman. It's a true pleasure to have you here on the show.
It's great to be here. Great to hear great guitar playing, especially when it's one of ours.
No, it's just that sound. You get that sound that everybody's been going for from the late 50s, early 60s type of guitar sound. What I'd like to do first is go a little bit in your background. You have a pretty interesting background. Yourself a guitar player, but you lived abroad for a long time and actually worked on guitars from or supervised guitars on abroad. And could you give us a little bit of rundown where you were doing?
I spent, before I started making these guitars, I spent 8 years in China doing mostly woodworking, various kinds of furniture, speakers, amps, kitchen cabinets, toys. I ran factories, built factories in China because my place here in L.A. went goodbye. So did I.
Mm-hmm.
Can't beat them, join them. Because I'm a manufacturer. And the only place I thought I could do that was China. I was a high-volume woodworker, and that's where you had to do it. So I spent 8 years over there, and during that time I was playing a lot of guitars in bars and restaurants and working in running a pretty large factory during the day. And I came back and built a guitar to bring back to China with me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a guitar right over here, this T-Bone, which is a Tele-style guitar. That's the one I built for myself while I was looking for another position in China. And I was planning on taking that back with me because I really wanted a good guitar, and I didn't have one. I had a B-Bender that I was playing in China for a long time, and it was a decent guitar, but it just didn't have that tone that I was looking for.
And what year was that guitar?
That guitar is probably early 2000s.
Oh, okay. So it was a much newer one. It wasn't that old sound.
It wasn't that old. And the guitars I'd had before that were not that good either. But I really wanted a B-Bender. I had the Jones for a B-Bender.
Mm-hmm.
And so I traded an amp, got that one. But it just didn't have tone.
Yeah. You know. For the people that don't know, the B-Bender guitar, I think it was developed with, I forget the guy that Clarence White from the Bird, that played with the Birds. And basically, when you push down on the neck, there's a mechanism that actually bends the B string either up or down. I forget.
It comes up.
Comes up. And they could do pedal steel type effects on it. It was quite effective. And if you ever listen to some of the Birds albums, you'll hear, I think it's after Sweetheart of the Rodeo, because I think they use pedal steel on that. But after that, the Clarence used that a lot, and he was the one that made it pretty famous.
Well, it's also on the Eagles' early songs, "Take It Easy," "Peaceful
Easy Feeling."
Oh, that's
right.
Feeling.
Yeah,
they used B-Bender there too.
Petey too. Page used it a lot.
Oh, yeah. He had the B-Bender too.
Yeah.
So it was a pretty popular thing at the time, and I think they still make them.
Yeah, I think they are. Not very many of them because it's weird and it's heavy.
Now, one of the things that I just want to mention on our Flow Guitar Enthusiasts Facebook page, I posted a bunch of pictures of my visit with Monique over to the factory. And the cool thing about them is they make everything themselves. They make the bridge parts. They make the pickups. They make all of it. And which I think is kind of interesting because it keeps the quality pretty consistent. And then the quality quite high. And I noticed that one of the things, if we're going to go through, I want to go through a little bit of your process of that. But I noticed that you had shown me, and there's a picture of there. He's got these slabs of wood that he cut out ready to be made into bodies. And they're solid. They were solid ash, I think, the ones that you had shown
probably
me.
Are.
So you use pretty much solid wood if you can.
Well, we always try to. Almost all of our ash body guitars are single-piece guitars. That's not a big effect on a guitar up to a point. Two pieces, yeah, that's as far as we'll go. Trees don't grow as big as they used to, so it's much more difficult to get. All of our ash guitars pretty much are single piece. Most of our mahogany ones are single piece. Alder is a little tougher. Pine, it just may not be that good of an idea because pine tends to cup, tends mm-hmm. to warp when it's that wide.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the lumber choice, I would say, is a bigger component. You got to pick the right stuff. And I do. I personally pick the lumber. And I go through a lot of it, and I make myself a big nuisance to lumber guys. And I'm lucky because I've been in the woodworking business in L.A. virtually, most of my life anyway. And I used to have a fairly big factory. And so I know all these lumber guys in L.A., and they still remember when I used to buy, train car loads of lumber. And so they're glad to see me until they hear, oh, you're making guitars. Oh, okay, well, we still got something over here. And I make a nuisance, and I say, bring down that lift, and mm-hmm. And I'll go through it. And they'll roll their eyes, and, oh, it's guitars. He's an old friend. Let him do it. And I do.
Now, you're using alder, ash, the common ones. Have you experimented with other woods?
Well, I did that some in the 70s, and I play those guitars now, and they sound like crap. So I know what ash sounds like, and most people know what to expect from that. And the same with alder. There are many other woods that might be suitable, and if you're going to point to one thing in a guitar that is the biggest effect on tone, it's the lumber. It's the species of lumber. You make that guitar right there in a different species, it'll sound like a different guitar. Virtually everything else the same. So I would say body wood is the biggest component, and then neck, whether it's rosewood or maple or ebony, that's the next biggest component, and then you go down the line from there. But lumber, you can't fix it. If you make a guitar out of crappy lumber, it's going to be a crappy guitar. No matter everything else you do perfectly, it's still going to sound bad.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of ways to screw it up.
Well, one of the things you were talking about, and I just wanted to mention, have you mention it on the air. We were talking about different guitars. You're probably most famous for these guitars that are this Tele style or the Strat style. But you also make like the double cutaway Gibson-ish type style. And you were talking about how you were able to reinforce the problem with a lot of those guitars that had the real thin necks is they used to snap at the body and where mm-hmm. the heel was.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about that and how you solved that?
Well, mahogany by nature is a very easily crackable lumber, especially when it gets, short grain. And as anybody out there who has owned a Gibson Les Paul probably mm-hmm. has a broken headstock, and I did not want to make that mistake.
Mm-hmm.
So by increasing certain sizes and areas, making the bottom of the pickup hole rounded instead of square,
mm-hmm.
making it square kind of makes a nice little spot for a crack to start, and all it takes is a little bit, and you can break a neck very easily. So making a lot of little changes that will reinforce that neck without making the guitar basically different or different feeling is our approach to that. And also a small volute under the truss rod hole in that neck will reinforce that area. And everybody knows, drop a mahogany neck guitar, with an angled headstock, and you're going to take a visit to the guitar repairman, and he's going to be very happy to see you.
Yeah. Well, I noticed Gibson tried to later on put like a little...
A volute.
Volute on there. Yours is pretty flat.
It's pretty flat, and it's very far behind the nut,
yeah,
where you'll never, ever feel it. But it's a necessary structural component because you've got the truss rod coming right out there. The neck is very narrow there. So there's very little wood at a point where you've got 75 pounds of string pull. Mm-hmm. You know, all you need to do is drop it once, and it's good night, Irene. Mahogany, by nature, wants to crack. And that's the spot. So, you know, you got to do something. You can't keep putting out a guitar that you know is, by definition and by structure, likely to break. If you know that, I think you're doing something a disservice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so... Volute or not, like it or not, I think it's necessary, and we put it in there, and we hand-carve it. And it's based on, by the way, Scarlett Johansson's upper lip.
You heard it here first. Have you had any issues with the maple necks that you use on the Fender-style guitars, the T-Bone and all those, or are those pretty sound in terms
maple of— is very, very sound. It's really hard. It's very stable, especially if it's been dried right. And, you know, these guitars have been around for a very long time, and they continue to be played from guitars that are 50, 60 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So maple is kind of easy. What is less easy is maple with rosewood. You know, in a case like that, you have what? In normal woodworking, it's not guitar making, say cabinet doors or any door or any panel.
Mm-hmm.
If you finish one side and don't finish the other side, you're building in warp. It's going to happen because moisture is able to go in and out of the unfinished side, but not the other side. So building in imbalance. Rosewood being unfinished, maple on the back side of the neck being finished, you're creating an opportunity for warp where moisture from the ambient air, the atmosphere, either goes into the rosewood or is released on a dry day. On a humid day, goes in. When anybody who's ever used a sponge knows what happens when moisture hits, you know, a porous surface like that and is absorbed. It gets bigger. Well, you got one side of the neck, the rosewood side, getting bigger when it's you get a lot of moisture in the air. If it gets bigger, the maple doesn't, you get backbow. If it does the opposite, where you take it from, say, a very moist climate or a moist day to a dry day, that moisture is going to be released. It gets smaller like a sponge drying up, and it will curl, and it will get front bow. So rosewood presents a bigger problem for stability just by the nature that it's not finished. So we try and mitigate that by putting lots of coats of linseed oil in there. And linseed oil is a finish. It's just not your glossy, mm-hmm, glossy finish. It goes into the wood. It's absorbed slowly but surely. And we put many coats on because there's nothing quite like sending a guitar from desert California in the summer to, say, Japan in the summer, with opposite climates, where dries a bone, it gets off that plane in Japan, and it is really humid. Believe me, I know. It's like getting off the plane and going into a steam bath. And that is not good for guitars, especially rosewood. They, mm-hmm, you know, all kinds of bad stuff happens.
Do you see you're talking about with the rosewood against maple.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have the same problem with the mahogany necks with the rosewood, or is it not
anything? Mahogany less so. And I'm not sure why that is. I think the angled neck, angled headstock helps some, but it's just a lot of applications of the linseed oil to try and seal the pores of the rosewood to keep that from happening. We do have problems usually after a few days after they acclimate in a completely different climate like that. They will straighten out on their own. But still, it illustrates the fact that just by putting an unfinished side with a finished side on a neck, you're building in a problem. Mm-hmm. And
Do you see that problem with ebony boards? Is that
We don't do a lot of ebony boards. They're not traditionally used in these types of guitars. Ebony is a lot a denser lumber. So we haven't experienced that much with it, and we're just actually starting to do a little ebony. Ebony is very hard to get in quantity, and it's expensive, and it is that second component in tone that's the biggest factor is the neck lumber. So if you want to color your tone, neck and body, that's number one and two. So ebony doesn't quite have that traditional sound, that tone that we're trying to get. We're kind of vintage, known for a vintage sound. And ebony doesn't fit that too well.
Joe, can you just play a little bit of this Tele?
This is his T-Bone.
I'm sorry, the prototype. This is the one he built for himself, but play a little bit of it to give him an idea of how that. So it gets that real nice vintage sound that everybody, 50s, late 50s, early 60s sound.
We are really looking, in that guitar, that was supposed to sound like a 52 Tele, except with a better neck pickup. And when I made that guitar, I was making it for myself. I had absolutely no intention of going into the guitar business. Mm-hmm. And that guitar started the business. It wasn't me. I had no choice. After people started playing that, can you make another one? You make another one? And that was about 2,000 guitars ago. And it's always kind of been that way. It's never, I mean, have any of you guys seen an ad for LSL Instruments anywhere? Mm. No. No ads. No marketing. All we do is make guitars and let the people vote with their wallets. And they have. And thank God, because I don't have to go back to China.
We should mention that it's LSL Instruments, not LSL Guitars. And if you want to see these beauties, you can go to lslinstruments.com. Is that right?
Yeah, it would be it. Kind of intuitive,
you
got to
see
these.
These are beautiful.
Yes.
I had a quick question. You know, we've got Teles and Strats, and a lot of companies have Teles and Strats. We were sitting talking at your shop one day, and we were talking about how you distinguish yourself from Fender Teles and Fender Strats. How would you describe the difference?
Well, you know, when I first started, I set out to make the guitar that I wanted. And the guitar that I really wanted was a 52. Well, 30, 40 grand here in L.A. anyway at that time. Forget about it. Not going to happen. So I sought to make a guitar that was made basically like they did it then. Start out with great lumber, chop it up by hand, hand shape the neck, hand do the frets, do all those little touches, the little things, the details that go into every single step, and do them right, and let's see what happens, including the pickups and even the pick guard, the truss rod I made, the nut hand cut, all of these little things, bit by bit, and most importantly to me is the neck pocket. And that fit. And every single one of our guitars, you push that neck into the pocket, you can hold that guitar up without any screws, and that neck won't move. It is solid.
Nice.
So, all of the little steps of what I sought to make a guitar for me. And that was exactly what I wanted. And when I played that first chord on that, it was like, oh my God. I did it. I thought I did it, but then, you know, you can easily, after spending months and months making this, making all the jigs and templates to make it, play that first chord, and you go, oh, yeah, I'm the man. That's it. I did it. It's great. But you get to be my age, and you kind of know you're kind of might be kidding yourself. So I thought I'd better get second opinions. You know, is this really as good as I hope it is, think it is? Was it that good? So I brought it around, you know. I brought it to Andy Brower. I brought it to Tommy Kay at Cal Vintage. Both of these guys are, I knew for a fact, exactly what I wanted. Because if you want to get better at anything, you don't want to hear the good stuff. You want to hear the bad stuff. Because the good stuff, you're not going to change. You are going to change stuff you did wrong. So let's hear it. Bring it on. Tell me what's wrong with this guitar. And that's sort of been the attitude ever since. And it still remains that. Is you learn from what you're doing wrong more than what you're doing right.
Mm-hmm.
Because the things you're doing wrong, you're going to change. You're going to make them better. And up to a point, you know, where I draw the line is I don't want to wake up one morning like many guitar companies tend to. And it's a natural thing to wake up one morning and you're making Squires. And you don't know how the heck that happened. What happened? You know, a series of small little changes that you thought at the time, or your employees or whoever, said, you know, it would be better if we just did this. It'd be a little bit faster, or it'd be a better guitar or whatever. And you do all those little steps over years and years and years. Next thing you wake up one morning and you're making Squires. You're making a $200 guitar and you're trying to sell for $2,000. And you don't know what happened. So there's a balance between learning, listening to people's opinions, and drawing the line at, well, just right before stupid. You know, don't change the good stuff.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, guard the good stuff with your life. And listen, at work, my employees are often, they just really hate that neck pocket, because we'll get a guitar all finished, beautiful, shiny, and then beat it up, of course. But if it's not reliced and we're doing this tiny, thin nitro finish that's really brittle, and then you go and you're going to ram that neck in there and it's going to be a tight fit. And that could be a challenge. And they're going, couldn't we make the neck pocket just a little bit wider? And I say, you know what, guys? You're here working, and people buy these guitars because they're great. It's not because of hype. It's not because of anything except the guitar itself. You put it on a wall and somewhere in New Jersey, nobody's heard of us. They're going to look up and say, what's that? And that guitar's got to sell itself.
Mm-hmm.
No help. You know, it's got to sell on its own merit. And you tell me, you think we ought to change that neck pocket? How much do you like your job? Because if we start making Squires and try and sell them for $2,000, watch what happens. Contrary, however, on the other hand, you keep making that guitar and watch what happens. Sell it at a great price. Do all those things correctly. Do the finish right, do wood selection, neck shape by hand, incredible fretwork. Do all of those steps that we all know make a great guitar. Do them all and watch what happens. Sell it at a great price. And this is what happens. You know, we rocket to the top of like the boutique guitar business without any ads. Shoot, I didn't even have a website for years. I had a picture of a guitar. Here, look. And that was enough to keep us busy. So, you know, you always have to balance what you want to listen to, where you draw the line.
Yeah. Well, the tight fit of the neck, I would assume that one of the big problems we've seen, I know Henry and myself and Joe have seen through the years with the Fenders, is the neck's shift. They move. You can move them. If you're playing and you're jumping around and you're doing some pretty intense play, the neck moves.
I think they call that tremolo. Oh, no.
But, I mean, and especially it was bad when they came out with the 3-bolt.
Right.
We were just not into the 3-bolt at all. But I presume that real tight fit, you don't get much movement.
Well, we not only make a tight fit on the sides, but we make a great fit on the bottom, too, the heel, where the neck contacts the lumber of the wood. That point of contact is very important to us. So we hand sand it and fit that to where we get, you know, great contact between them. If you open up most widely used bolt-on guitars and you take that neck off, you'll see a label on there, a barcode. You'll see drippy paint sometime. What kind of connection is that going to have at the most important connection in the guitar? You won't see that in ours. We make a great connection both on the sides of the neck pocket and the bottom. And then in order to get our necks on, they have to be clamped in place. We tell people specifically, don't take this neck off unless it's absolutely necessary, because we do it differently. And I'm not going to reveal everything we do, but our necks are clamped in when they're screwed, and it might as well be glued. But all of that is meaningless until you play the guitar. That's where the rubber meets the road, and it works.
Yeah. Well, when it's that solid of a connection, you're getting the vibrations going through into the body. You're getting the...
Right. It acts as one unit rather than two separate resonating, you know, bodies.
Right.
And that's just like one of the steps. If you take all of them, there are hundreds of steps. You do them all right.
Mm-hmm.
And chances are you're gonna have a really great guitar on your hands.
Yeah. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back. We're going to talk some more about these amazing LSL guitars. Hang on, and here we go from a word from our sponsors.
Do you want to get the best possible tone from your acoustic instrument? Guitar Hummer is a guitar stand that does more than just rest your guitar. It creates a gentle but continuous vibration that is equivalent to playing your instrument all day, every day. This concentrates years of seasoning into mere weeks, improving tone and sustain. You may not be able to afford a vintage guitar, but you now can achieve vintage sound. But don't take our word for it. Try it for 60 days, and if you don't notice a marked difference, return it for a full refund. Go to GuitarHummer.com for more information or to purchase.
Hi, this is Aaron Raby, your resident guitars and amps geek at Sweetwater Sound. 1-800-222-4700. Or catch us on the web at www.sweetwater.com. Still looking for the gift for the musician in your family? At Sweetwater, it's not too late. We've got everything from guitars to amps to accessories, recording and PA gear, keyboards, drums, you name it. If your musician's into it, we can supply it. Just give us a call and we'll work it out for you. 1-800-222-4700. Or again, you can visit us on the web at www.sweetwater.com. Let us help you give the musician and your family a great holiday. Again, I'm Aaron Raby. Thanks for having us.
We are back. Thanks, guys. That was Joe and Henry. Henry had brought up a question at the break, and he was asking about quartersawn, I guess, in the maple neck. Was it the maple neck you were talking about?
Quartersawn versus flat sawn. It's an age-old, controversy. Not really controversy, but opinions differ. I would say that quartersawn lumber, where the definition of, is where the annular rings, the dark lines in the grain of lumber, is perpendicular to the surface. Imagine holding a ruler, the old ruler thing. You hold it flat, you can bend it. You hold it vertically, you can't bend it. And it's kind of the same thing. In woodworking, the dark lines in the grain of the lumber is harder, being winter wood, than the space between them, being summer wood. Wood grows faster, it's less dense, the lines are the hard part. They're like the ruler. So from a strictly woodworking standpoint, quarter sawn is better. Now, notice I said strictly woodworking, because it's going to be stiffer. The question is, and I don't know the answer to this, is it better for a guitar? Because we're not talking about a woodworking project. We're talking about a guitar. Now, I use both. I have not found a consistent difference in tone between the two. Courtesan is much, much harder to get, much more expensive. And I'm not certain that that, it, from a woodworking standpoint, for me, it's probably better because I'm going to get less neck issues. And in guitar making, neck issues are, you know, the bane of my existence. So, you know, Fender, for many years, produced these guitars, and many of them are still being out there played every day and every night with flats on necks. So the stability argument might not hold water in that case. So I don't have a definitive answer. From a woodworking standpoint, yes, I would say courtesan's the way to go. We use a lot of it, and I really love it because it's hard to get, and it's rare, and it's cool and expensive. But I don't know. Both of these guitars that you guys have here are flat-tom necks. Most of the necks I produce these days are courtesan necks, like that bass there. I don't know. I don't know that there is a definitive answer because courtesan is the way to go, but give me a 52 Tele with flats on neck. I'd love it, you know, and those necks seem pretty stable. 60 years, yeah, I'm going with that too, so.
You had mentioned now that we took a look at the Tele, the original T-Bone, the first one that you built for yourself. And you also mentioned that this CVS is the model number or the Strat.
Oh, no, that's a Saticoy.
Saticoy. And now you said that was your number one of that.
Right.
Can you tell me a little bit about this guitar?
Well, you know, you can only go on so far just making T-style guitars. We had to come out with more stuff, and a Strat style was the obvious way to go for us. I wanted to make, like I did in the T-Bone, a vintage correct Strat. A friend of a friend named Charles Doherty in Texas had a Strat, and he was willing to let us borrow it. It was number 1055. I refer to it now as the Mother Strat. He loaned us that guitar. And when I opened the case, I mean, first of all, I can't believe this guy's going to send me a guitar from Texas. He doesn't know me from Adam. I'm a friend of a guy I spoke to, you know, on the phone. So here's this gorgeous. I opened the case and whoa, that is the Mother Strat. It was gorgeous and it sounded like a dream. I couldn't have asked for a better template. So I set out to make a guitar that was equal to that because I thought that was just, it was perfect. You know, it was a 54, number 1055. And an interesting story. I was sitting in my office telling somebody else this story. A guy who works on the Leno show, you probably know him. He has several of our guitars. I'm telling him this story about number 1055. And he says, 1055? I said, yeah. He says, that was my guitar. He owned that guitar in the 70s. Wow. He has pictures of it. I got this from a guy in Texas. So anyway, I get that guitar, and we set out to recreate that guitar. And there it is in your hand. I think we did a pretty good job. We've sold a lot of those, and now we make them in several different lumbers. And, you know, we make the Carver high-end model. And
Henry, can you go through, just play a little bit and go through the different pickups so they can hear a little bit of how versatile that guitar is? That's the middle and treble pickup together in the out of phase.
This one is a maple neck. kind of like a 54.
That's the middle pickup by itself. Now the middle and bass. Or the neck pickup. Now I want to mention that we're using my it's a silver face Vibrachamp, my Vibrachamp. So, but he's getting that really glassy sound that a lot of people like out of the Strat sound. When he's playing the distorted sound, if you want to kick that in, he's using a custom-made Micromay made this RAM drive. But it gives you kind of an idea if we really crank the amp up full blast. Gets that sound and it and a lot of sustain. The guitar just has amazing sustain to it. So now, what's the difference between the Satakoi and the CVS?
Well, they're basically the same. When I made that guitar there, that first Satakoi, I Carl Verheyen, I knew he had one of our T-bones, so I figured, and I know Carl is like Strat tone guru. I figured, if I can make that guy happy, there's nobody on the planet that wouldn't at least, I could probably get everybody. So anyway, so I called Carl up and I asked him to come down and tell me, like I did with the T-Bones, tell me what was wrong with it. He liked it, but he didn't jump and buy one. Mm-hmm. He's Carl and he's got guitar companies falling over themselves, trying to get him signature models. So about a year later, we've been making them for about a year, and I think we got our chops together and did the refinements and listened to people. Finally, Carl calls me, and he asks me if I want to make a Carl Verheyen signature model. Well, all right. Yeah, okay, I guess. So we set out to do that. And like I say, Carl brings over these incredible guitars that he's been playing for years and years. 59, 61, 65, all incredible. He's got an ear. That guy can hear color in a dark room, I mean, he's tough to please, which is great. You want the toughest guy on the planet. Because if you make him happy, you're in like Flint. And so we spent months developing a guitar that would be right for him, which was alder with a rosewood neck, pickups that he likes, and neck shape off of one of his guitars, a clone shape, and some other features that we do for Carl, the floating bridge, tuned floating bridge, where you pull up on a trem, you get an exact full step on a G string, so you can whine.
Oh, wow.
It's got to be tuned. That'll drive you a little nuts, that a few times. So anyway, we do it. After months and months, here it is, Carl. And the good news is that we've sold a lot of them. Carl comes around rather often and checks them to make sure that we're not deviating from that guitar, which is exactly what I spoke about earlier. We don't want to do that. You get it right and you keep doing that. And so he just got back from a 45 gig tour of Europe couple of weeks ago, and he was over at the shop, I think it was Friday, and he opened his guitar case, his CB Special, the first one. He opens it up, and he says, he looks at me, and he says, "This guitar is the best guitar in the world." And I almost fell over. I mean, it's one thing to make him happy, but that happy, nobody could hope for that. Because I swear this guy can hear everything. He, he's really tone conscious. And to be able to make him happy, is like the pinnacle of my career doing this. I'm just ecstatic with that guitar. And virtually everybody we send those to, we have certain body weights that we have to be within to make Carl Verheyen. We use the best lumber, the best alder we have within certain weight limits. And his neck, and everything just seems to work on that guitar. And we're really proud of it. I'm really proud of it, as you can probably tell.
Yes, and we're getting close to the end of the show, so I want to talk about real quick, and then I have another question about some your pickups and all the hardware that you make. But anyway, you brought in a prototype that you're going to announce for NAMM. Can you talk a little bit about this? Henry's playing it right now.
Well, this is our first effort into the bass world. I used to make basses back in Berkeley in the 70s and 80s. That's what I made mostly. So it was time for us to make a bass. And so this is it. It's P-style bass. And this is the first one. And once again, we're looking for opinion. What do people think? And I like it, but of course, I'm not making guitars for me. So this is our first foray into the wonderful world of bass. And I think it's cool. We're going to offer this in a few different nut widths and try and keep it as vintage as possible. Nitro finishes, real thin, great woods, great neck pockets. All those steps, do them right, watch what happens. Hopefully that'll work for this, you know, our pickups.
I was fooling around with it before the show, and it plays great. It's a great neck.
Well, I shape that one. I always do the first ones. You know, I don't do them all anymore because Lord knows I can't do everything anymore. But that is a quartersawn neck, and that's a perfectly quartersawn neck. Look at that headstock. That's quartersawn.
We've taken pictures. We'll post them up there.
It's a quartersawn and curly. So it's like, wow. I love great lumber. I'm strange that way.
Difference. Now, you're using a rosewood fretboard on this. Are you going to make a full maple?
Later on, yeah. I think we're going to stick with rosewood because the truss rod structure is different. On a rosewood one, you put it in from under the fingerboard. On maple, you put it in from the back.
Right.
And right now, we're set up for the front, rosewood. And with NAMM coming up and, you know, models coming out as fast as we can develop them and get them right, it's hard to do everything. You know?
Yeah.
So we'll start with rosewood and then slowly, you know, make all those transitions that are inevitable, like the PJ bass and the jazz and this nut width, that one up width. I found out this basic rule in guitar making that no matter what you make, everybody wants something different.
Oh,
why don't we put a P90 in the headstock, you know?
Yeah. Now, Henry, you're playing it right now. Give us your thoughts on how it plays, because you've played a lot of P basses in your day.
I like the way it feels. It's got a substantial neck to it.
And you're making the pickups, right?
Yes. And, you know, my thought about basses has always been to try and make it punchy, you know, make it articulate and punchy. And because that tone knob there, you can remove all that. But there's yet to be devised a tone knob that can add it. So I always try and make err towards the side of high-end punchiness, because the fundamentals are basically always going to be there, the fundamental notes. And, you know, you can't add that. You can only take it away. People try to add it, but it's always crappy, in my opinion.
Well, I'm sure that neck, being the quartersawn, the more solid neck, I found that makes the bass more punchy for my own experience.
It certainly seems to be having a big effect on this one, because this is, it's a snappy bass. It's very articulate, you know.
Yeah, I'm signaling Henry to just do a little bit with the thumb, just to give you an idea. I mean, it's got... We're using it through my VibraChamp, so I don't really have the bottom end.
Right, but, one step above an iPhone.
But the bass is really punchy. If you play it, you can feel it hit you, and the body resonates pretty well. So it's
Well, we try and make all of our guitars do that. And they do. You can feel them. You can feel them resonate as a single unit.
And what did you pattern the pickup as? A 50 style or a 60 style?
50s. We always start with the 50s. That seems to be a formula that works for us. And, if you want something to have articulate tone and a good attack, you keep the windings down, low output. The more output you do, the less high-end you get. And so nothing seems to be free. Amazing about this life. Mm-hmm. So we keep the windings low, keep the output low, keep the tonal range wide, and let people mess with it. There are tons of pedals, there are tons of amps. You can do whatever you want. But if you have a full tone going into whatever you got on the floor or whatever amp, then you can color it any way you want. But if your guitar is sounding like somebody coughing into a pillow, you're going to have a little tough time with the effects. They're not going to do much for you. Then it will sound like two people coughing into a pillow.
And the fact that you guys make your own pickups, is it hard to keep them consistent, or is it pretty much a science?
Not really. They are hand wound, so there are differences, but they're slight. You know. We've made enough of them to where we can keep them very consistent. I don't see big differences in DC resistance on them or tone, and we're really happy with those pickups. Those pickups have been very, very good to me.
No, they sound vintage. They have that vintage sound.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I just asked Alnico 2, 5.
Five.
Okay. Alnico 5.
Right. We did a lot of experimentation with 2, 3, 5, 8, ceramic, you know, whatever. And, you know, if you're going for vintage tone, there it is. Stop right there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for other things that we're working on, we're doing that process again. And, we're coming out with new models, so... Pickup process can make you crazy soon, as you can tell by my voice.
Well, we're at the end of the show. It went by so fast, and I didn't even get to talk to you about your hardware, more about the pickups and some of the other model guitars. So you have to come back. It's a given.
Well, I'd be happy to. And in the meantime, people can go to our website at LSL Instruments, Facebook.
Yes, LSL Instruments are on Facebook.
NAMM Show, don't forget.
NAMM Show, oh
it's
my
the
God.
NAMM Show, it's a big deal.
I'm trying to forget about it, but yes. And,
I saw Lance at the end of the show last year, and he looked like he was going to lay on the floor and stay there.
Yeah, it feels like a steamroller hit.
Well, we're all going to definitely come by at your booth and play these guitars again. There's going to be a lot. Thank you so much for being on. Monique, thank you very much for co-hosting with me.
Oh, yeah.
You can find Monique Caravello on Facebook and any other information you want to give out, because she's worked on my Les Paul, and she's done some amazing guitar work. If you guys need your guitars beefed up, fixed up, if you need a pedal board, she's the one to go to. And if you need your amp purpleized, she's the one to go to.
Not just purple.
That's
true. You can get the snake skin, you can get country engraved, you can get whatever you want.
So
you can get a hold of me at 818-309-0781, or just look up my name on Facebook, Monique Caravello, and friend request me and send me a message, and I'll see what I can do for you.
And I want to thank Chris Beggs, was shooting pictures of everything. We're going to post these pictures up so you'll see all the guitars we were talking about. Joe Mazzio, killer player, and he's in the, check out Facebook, The Grumps OC. The Grumps OC. And are you any gig that you need to push right now that you're going to be playing coming up?
Nothing I can give you folks right now.
Oh, okay. But anyway, they play all around the Orange County area. And then Henry, thanks again for demonstrating these guitars too with Joe. Henry's built a couple of custom amps for me. We've worked on guitars for years. He's helped me build guitars, get parts, and he taught me a lot about Fenders. So Anyway, everybody, we're going to go out with them jamming, Joe and Henry jamming out. Everybody have a great holiday. We will see you next year. Have a great New Year's.
Happy New Year.